Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Really, Duncan had it. They turned it over. Alley-oop back to Kevin.
Oh, baby! Woo! KD!
You can see it coming, and the building is electric off that slam dunk.
Hello and welcome to the Wolf Among Wolves podcast. I'm your host, Brendan Hedke. As always, you can find me on Twitter at @B_HedkeNBA. And the show is, as always, a part of the A Wolf Among Wolves podcast network on awolfamongwolves.com. Today, I'm joined by Logan Alton, another writer at A Wolf Among Wolves. I don't know why I was thinking former. I was trying to think like of a word for colleague or something. I'm sorry, Logan. How's it going, man?
I'm apparently retired, but other than that, I'm doing well.
Not retired at all. I don't know what word I was trying to look for, but there was like a specific word I was trying to find, and it just slipped my brain. I haven't had you on since when? Before or like right after the draft? Maybe was that the last one we did?
Yeah, I think it was the draft hot takes one. And
yeah, it's been a while, and I don't know why we haven't like sat down to do it, but thanks for coming on, man. I really do appreciate it. This should be fun. We're going to talk about Cat coming back because it kind of was a surprise. I think most people were surprised when he was listed as doubtful in Tuesday's injury report, you know, a day in advance of the game. I kind of figured he just wouldn't be there, and maybe they were shooting for Friday's game. But then the Shams notification came out claiming Cat was good, and then everybody's excited, and then Cat comes back. Like, this is news to me situation. But yeah, I guess. Okay. I want to get your take on that. Like, do you think that Cat knew he was going to play and he just didn't want to put out there yet? Or do you think he truly was a game time decision and Shams just got wrong information? Or what do you kind of view that situation as?
Yeah, obviously neither of us know how Cat was feeling or anything, but I would definitely say that like Cat was probably 75% sure that he was back and just wanted to like make sure that he felt good during the game time or during the like warm-ups and stuff.
I think my read on it was like Cat was pretty sure he was gonna play unless like something didn't feel right heading up to like right before tip or whatever, but somebody must have like told Shams that. And I wonder if that causes like any sort of divide or something like between Cat and the organization. Like that's something I kind of worry about. It was like, if Cat didn't want that news getting leaked out, if it was somebody within the organization and that news did get leaked out, like could Cat become upset about that because, you know, he can't trust the organization to like keep things in close wraps. Like I'm not too worried about it, but it is in the back of my mind. Like if the star player doesn't want that going out, like it probably shouldn't go out.
Yeah, in the long haul of things, I'm sure it's no harm, no foul, but if it was like a constant occurrence of like leaking that stuff and whatnot, then I'd be a little more worried.
Yeah, and I agree. And Champs probably is just reporting the, you know, what he heard from whoever it was. So I don't blame him with that one, but I do blame him kind of with how he handled it when Cat did, you know, come back. Like Shams didn't apologize for, you know, jumping the gun or anything. He basically just like tweeted like Cat's ready to go or whatever, kind of like vindicating his first tweet and saying like, you know, I got it right all along, which I don't know. It's not that big a deal. It was just something I saw people talking about on Twitter. So I kind of wanted to bring that up. But yeah, it was good to see him back. Like I said this before the game, like no matter how the game ended, like I wasn't going to be too upset about it, just because Towns was back and like that was my moment for the night. Like win, loss, I don't care. Just having him back on the floor just gives me a lot of hope for what the rest of the season can be if the team is fully or close to fully healthy.
Yeah, and all things considered, I wasn't even anticipating a good game from him. Like he was coming back from COVID. I wouldn't have been shocked if it was just a bad game.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have been shocked if it was like a game that he only played. I wouldn't have been shocked if he only played 12 minutes or something, you know, like I didn't know what his minute load was going to be. But he played 31, I think. So he's close to his, you know, his average. But you could tell he's still out of shape. I mean, he dealt with a lot, and according to his like post-game press conference, he has some underlying health conditions that, you know, probably made it a lot tougher on him. And he was talking about some of that, but he didn't really get too far into it. So all things considered, ending up with what, like 18 points, 10 boards, 3 assists, pretty solid stat line. I can't complain about that from him. And the Clippers are what they're probably a 7-10 points better than the Wolves without Paul George, right? Like probably more than that, considering the Wolves don't have D'Lo. Like they're a better team than the Wolves. So like losing by 7 doesn't like hurt me that much, but I was a little disappointed with how good the Wolves were playing, and to see it fall apart in like that one stretch in the third quarter, that makes it more disappointing than like just looking at the final score, in my opinion.
Yeah, they definitely got outcoached when they started picking on Josh Okogie, and the Wolves just fed him.
Yeah, and we've seen that multiple times where teams have just like stopped guarding Josh Okogie, and that's been something that it's kind of concerning, but in the first half, Josh looked good, like offensively and defensively, you know, cutting, drawing fouls at the rim and stuff. Like that's the Josh that's fully optimized that makes this team like play well. And they just stopped guarding him in the second half. And that's pretty much all she wrote. And then, you know, Josh's head was being called for after that. So it's going to be a challenge on Ryan Saunders to figure out not only how he can play Josh, but when he can play Josh, what lineups against who, like when to take him out because he's not getting guarded and he's maybe taking too many shots. Cause like I thought he played good defense last night for most of the game. Kawhi was going to get his points against pretty much whoever, I think. So having Josh on the floor in the first half, I think was pretty beneficial. In the second half, Kawhi just kind of did what he did. So I thought he played good that way, but you know, it's hard to have any, you know, response to Josh shooting more shots than Kat and Anthony Edwards. Like that's not an optimal offense for the Timberwolves at all.
No.
You know, unless he somehow gets 15 wide open backdoor cuts or something. No other way should he be taking 15 shots in a game, you know?
Yeah.
I don't see a world where that's like an optimized version of this Timberwolves, like offense, and that's on coaching staff. And I've been like one of Ryan's biggest defenders just because he hasn't had all those players, but I've also acknowledged that like the offense sucks, like his coaching, his rotations haven't been good. So you know, he's got to figure some stuff out, and like that's a big thing. It's like, how do you optimize Josh Okogie, who is really important to your team as a defender? How do you optimize him offensively? What's his role there? Figuring that out, figuring out the rotations to where you have him in there so that he's not actively hurting you when he's on the court.
Yep. Would you rather play Jarrett Culver or Josh Okogie? Say there's one rotation spot left.
I would still play Josh Okogie. I think just seeing how he played in the first half last night and just knowing the type of defender he is, people will bring up like these defensive metrics about like Josh Okogie's defensive metrics like aren't that great. But like he's the type of player that like just deters offensive players away from shooting. You know, like Kawhi Leonard, like Josh is going to be like so up in Kawhi's grill that he just passes it because he's frustrated, or whoever the star may be or whatever. Culver's not really like that. Culver has a solid defensive presence, but you know, he's kind of shoddy with that. Sometimes he's really good defensively, sometimes he's not. And I think the Wolves just need more of that point attack defense from Josh. And I think Josh's role in an offense is clearer. It's just that he hasn't really been playing in that role. Culver's offensive game is just a big old bag of questions that I just don't really know. And I'm also one of Culver's biggest supporters. Like I don't know, I see potential there, but it's tough to figure out where he fits into this fold. So I would go with Josh. What's your take on that? Who would you go with, Jared or Josh? Because
I'd probably go with Culver.
I figured that's what was gonna be your answer.
Yeah, he's a slight downgrade defensively. He won't like do what Josh does in terms of kind of shutting someone down. He'll just make life inconvenient for somebody. Like the shots will be just a little more awkward than normal. But he has more offense. Like he's or if he has the ball, it's not going to have to be either a quick pass. Like, he can handle the, or run the offense, and he's a better shooter than Josh, not by much, but still pretty good.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say too, is like, Josh Okogie this year shooting 20% from three, and Jarrett Culver this year is shooting 26% from three, which isn't great, but like, we've seen Culver make like open shots that you're like if he gets some of those shots at Josh, like Josh had that one, stretch against, I don't remember what team, but he got four open threes. I don't know if it was the Warriors or who it was.
I want to say it was the Warriors, yeah.
But he got four open threes. They just let him. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was worse. They just let him shoot. Like, I'm pretty confident Culver would have made one of those. Josh didn't make a single one of those. So yeah, that's like, that's the type of thing where it's like, I don't know. And like a really confident Jarrett Culver is like a pretty dang solid offensive player. Not, you know, shooting the ball wise, but like getting to the rim and, you know, cutting and all that stuff. I would still take Josh, but I get the argument for Jarrett in that situation. And maybe even more so now, thinking that like you have a Jarrett Vanderbilt and a Jaden McDaniels to play, you know, more of that defense against some of the higher scoring players in the league. But I want to see a world where they both can be in the rotation, but like a guy like Jalen Noel is just like making that really hard to find a place for Culver and Okogie in this rotation. Cause Noel just, he's having a monster season. Like, I mean, he's scoring I don't even know how to like put into words what Jalen Noel's been doing recently. He's up to 11 points per game this season, and that's in 17 minutes a night. Like, it's pretty good stuff from a guy that, you know, really struggled last year in the limited minutes he got.
Yeah, did he score over 10 points yesterday? I think he ended with 9, right?
I think he ended with 9, yeah. I don't think he came back in after you put that tweet out, so.
Yeah, he broke his game of 10-plus points.
What was the streak at? 8 games? Okay, that's pretty impressive. And obviously his minutes have been, you know, higher than they were, but like he's been really, you know, increasing his efficiency a lot lately. Like, he struggled, he wasn't hitting the three early, and now he's up to 40% from deep on the season.
Yeah, and he hilariously is the like number one scoring option on the bench unit, which is amazing.
And some of that came with Naz Reid like not being in the bench unit. You know, Naz was in like a starting unit. But yeah, if he's in the rotation, you know, your bench scorers are going to be like Jalen Noel and Naz Reid, because, you know, Vanderbilt, I don't think Vanderbilt's going to be a starter. I think it's either Josh Okogie at the four, or it's going to be McDaniels at the four. So then you're looking at a bench unit of like Rubio, Noel, if it's Noel over Culver, and then, you know, Vanderbilt, Naz Reid. So it's like Naz and Noel, they score in different ways too. So it's hard to say like, who's your go-to like guy or whatever, but those are the true scoring threats off the bench. And then you just have like some guys there to play some defense, you know, pass the ball, cut, that type of thing. But he really could be like a bargain Beasley, which is like a nickname that people have been throwing out there, which is like valuable for a bench unit. Cause the Timberwolves bench, you know, has actually been pretty good for a lot of the season. And to have some scoring off that bench is going to be important now that Edwards has moved into the starting lineup.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, you go. Were you going to say that you think Edwards should still come off the bench, or what is that what you were?
No, I was going to say that our bench could probably beat our starters in a game.
Oh no. Okay. so I want to ask you this. What do you think the 10 man rotation should be? Like, starting unit, bench unit. And obviously you can stagger minutes and stuff, so like it's not like 5 in, 5 out, but like if you had to put 5 to start and then 5 to come off the bench, and knowing that those 5 would at some point all play together off the bench, what would be your ideal rotation?
Ideally, it would be probably that's tough with Ant. Ideally, you would want one point of attack defender that can guard the wings, and that's not Ant or Beasley. But I'd probably still go with D'Angelo Russell. Beasley, Edwards, McDaniels, and Cat.
Okay. Yeah, so you said Russell, Beasley, Edwards, McDaniels, Cat. That was your five? Okay, and that's the five that I personally want to see. And that's what Dane Moore and I talked about too, is that was kind of our five, and we both kind of agreed with that without really knowing where each other was coming from. But yeah, I like that five. But then you get to the bench unit, and that's where I kind of struggle. But the reason I like that five is you got that defense next to Cat still with Jaden McDaniels, or you can put Jaden at the wing, right? You can have him guard, you know, maybe he's not doing Josh Okogie type things, but like he's deterring shots because he's got long arms, you know, and he's just got good defensive instincts. But off the bench, you got Rubio, you got Okogie, Noel, Nas, and Vanderbilt. Like, that's three non-shooters, and then you got two good shooters in Noel and Nas Reed. And I know you're shaking your head because, you know, Ricky Rubio has played bad this year, and Jordan McLaughlin has honestly just played better than Rubio has this season. But until Ricky Rubio's traded, like, he's not going to get benched for Jordan McLaughlin. And we don't even know if he will get traded, but there's not a lot of spacing on that team, on that bench unit. And that's where I kind of get the argument for Okogie in the starting lineup over McDaniels, or even Vanderbilt in the starting lineup over McDaniels, just to have more spacing in that second unit. But at the same time, if you want to optimize your stars, you optimize your stars in the starting lineup and then just hope the bench can hold it down.
One fun thing that I would personally play with, which would probably never happen, is giving a pair of Josh Okogie and Malik Beasley the Thabo Sefolosha and James Harden treatment, where Beasley's off the bench as a super six man, but Okogie starts as just a, you know, quick pull him right away and give them that defense they need.
Yeah, and I think eventually, you know, we could see Malik Beasley come off the bench, but right now, when he's legitimately been your best player so far this season, like, you can't bench the guy. But he doesn't make like high tier starter money. Like, he makes $13 million this year, and he'll make like $16 million in the third or fourth year or whatever. So like, he's not making like insane money, to where you can never put him on the bench. But right now, I don't think you can, especially when he's been your highest scorer this season. And obviously, when Towns is healthy, Towns is going to always be the best player on this team for the time being, until Anthony Edwards blossoms into a star, or you trade for someone or whatever, you somehow hit on the draft pick. But like, Cat's the best player on this team until further notice. But then honestly, it's been Malik so far this season. And then it's been, you know, D'Angelo Russell. So do you think when D'Angelo Russell comes back from his injury, and Malik's hopefully still there, maybe he gets suspended for a couple games or whatever, but when those three are there, what do you expect to happen? Who do you think will be saying is the best player, second best player, third best player? Like, what do you see that hierarchy like looking like? Not like who's going to take the most shots and stuff, but like who's the best?
I'm still going to go with Towns, Beasley, D'Lo.
Okay, I disagree. I think it'll be Cat, D'Lo, Beasley. And I don't think it's because I think Beasley's going to get worse with Towns back in the lineup. I just think that Russell's going to really be optimized a lot more playing next to Cat and still playing next to Beasley. So I don't think it's like, oh, Beasley's just going to, you know, get worse. I think it's just that D'Lo's going to get better, which would be a good thing. You know, like, if this version of Beasley that we've been seeing stays about the same and he becomes your third best player, you're looking pretty good for those three playing together. And maybe that's more of a hope, but like, I kind of have thought about it and like how it's going to, you know, work out. Like, Cat is going to set better screens than Nas Reed did. He's going to space the floor for D'Lo better. He's going to open up more lanes for D'Lo to get to the basket, which we've seen D'Lo drive more now than we have, you know, what we've known from him in prior years and everything. So yeah, I, I hope that it comes down to that, and I think it might. But even if this Malik Beasley is your second best player and D'Lo is almost as good, you know, if there is an argument there, the offense is going to be pretty good. As long as, you know, you can run some sets for some guys. And then Anthony Edwards as your fourth option, where he doesn't have a huge load, but he could still give you 20 pretty much any night he wants. Like, four guys that can give you 20. If all of those four, between those four guys, if you can get 80 points a night, which I think you can, because Cat, D'Lo, Beasley, probably between the three will probably average like 22 a game. You know, like Cat's at like 20 right now, but he's like a 24 point per game scorer. And D'Lo's probably around there, 20 to 22, and Beasley's around there. And then you throw in like 15 from Edwards. You're at like 80 points, like 80 points from four guys.
20 off the bench for Noel
and Naz Reid.
Yeah, another 20 for, okay.
But if you think about it like this, say if Noel is in the rotation, you have 80 points between those four that I just mentioned in the starting lineup. Say you get 20 between Noel and Naz Reid, which probably might be low even. That's 100 points a night right there. And obviously they're not always going to get those numbers, but like that's 20 points a night or 100 points a night. You just need like 15 to 20 points between like Okogie, Rubio, McDaniels, who could light it up for 15, you know, sometimes. And then also out of like Vanderbilt running with Rubio. And that's another reason I like Vanderbilt in the backup role, is just having a lob threat for Rubio is going to help Rubio a lot, I think. But yeah, that's just, I'm like, how is this offense not going to be good? And it all comes down to just like, the offense has to be like, the system has to be just like fine for this offense to be good. And hopefully the system will be fine with Cat back, but it hasn't been fine so far. Maybe that has to do with Cat being out or whatever, but yeah, I don't know. I just think this offense is going to be really good. And I think Cat just opens up the door for this offense. I want to ask you, cause I wrote a piece about this, but I want to ask your opinion too. What do you think the biggest thing Cat does for this offense is outside of his scoring? Like, how do you think he opens up this offense with just him being on the court?
Gravity. Everyone has to know where Cat is and pay attention to him. You can't leave him open. If he has the ball, he's going to get the attention that a star does. And even though Naz Reid is like a mini Cat, he doesn't command nearly as much respect in terms of gravity and everything. And like, that alone opens up so much more space for everyone to drive, shoot, and what have you. And then him allowing Naz to get back to the bench and play over Ed Davis, who performed admirably, and Jared Vanderbilt playing out of position also helps a ton.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. The gravity that Towns has is just like ridiculous. You just watch it and like, there was a couple triple teams he got last night. And I wrote about this in that piece I wrote too. Like, it's not just that he gets double teamed. Like, he's really good at passing out of double teams, which has been something that he wasn't necessarily good at the first few years he was in the league. And we've seen progression from that, you know, skip passes, you know, from the block to the other corner and stuff. And I've talked about this before, but like, now that person in the other corner at some point is going to be Malik Beasley instead of Travion Graham. Like, yeah, like that's important. So that's going to help the team. Obviously it was Josh Okogie a bunch the other night, which wasn't good, but like, say that's Jaden McDaniels. Like, I feel comfortable with Jaden McDaniels taking those corner threes that Josh took. So that's another reason I think I don't call him J-Mac. Jaden McDaniels should be in the starting lineup, just because he's going to hit those open shots, not all of them obviously, but like way better than Josh Okogie probably ever will.
Yeah. Another thing I was going to say is, going back to the shot distribution and everything, who do you think gets the short end of the stick in the starting lineup of Malik Beasley, D'Angelo Russell, Anthony Edwards, and Cat in terms of being your shots and also like usage rate? Like, D'Lo, Beasley, and Ant have all been pretty ball dominant while they've been on the court. With Cat returning, who do you think gets hurt the most by that?
So, usage rate includes like assisting, right?
I believe so, yeah.
So I don't know if a usage rate is going to go down too much, but I think Cat's going to lose the most shots out of anybody compared to what we've seen from him. But I don't necessarily think his scoring's going to go down all that much. I think they're all going to lose some shots, which is fine. I think it's fine for them to lose shots because then theoretically you're getting smarter shots. Because what we've seen from Cat is that he's a very willing passer. What we've seen from Beasley is that he's actually a very willing passer as well. And then with D'Lo, he's a willing passer, except, you know, obviously in crunch time, there's been times where it's been like D'Lo takeover, but throughout the game, he's a pretty willing passer as well. And Ant is a willing passer too. So all those guys are going to lose some shots, obviously, because you added like the best player, on this team back into the lineup. But it's going to create better shots. Like, Ant's going to get more shots at the rim. Beasley's going to have more cuts. D'Lo's going to be able to find Ant and Beasley cutting because Cat just pulls defenses towards him. And Cat's going to get better shots too, because eventually when Cat passes out of this double team and he hits like three times in a row and he hits Beasley and then McDaniels and then Ant, they all hit a three in the corner. Yeah, you're not doubling Cat for a few possessions in a row because like the Wolves just burned you from deep. So then Cat's going to get some one-on-one in the block and whatever. So I think Cat probably loses the most shots, and that's not because it's not like built around him anymore. It's just because that he's such a willing passer that he's going to find guys. And that's probably what an optimized Timberwolves lineup looks like. But I think at the end of the day in crunch time and stuff, Cat's got to be the one with the ball in his hands, making the decisions. But I don't know. They're all going to lose shots. I would say Cat loses the most. And if it's not Cat, then it's probably Beasley.
Yeah, I could see that.
But I think we'll see more too with just like guys getting staggered, getting their minutes staggered away from each other and just not always having those four on the court at the same time. There's going to be times I would like to see it where one of those guys is pretty much on the court for all of the game. But there's going to be a lot of times where at least two of those guys are on the floor, which helps, you know. And then it won't be, you know, sometimes there'll be room for just Cat and D'Lo to work. Or sometimes it'll be like, okay, Malik and Ant, like you're taking over. And I think that'll work out good for the Wolves. Who do you think like loses the most shots with everybody healthy?
Honestly, I could see either Cat or surprisingly D'Angelo Russell.
And I don't think that's a bad thing if D'Lo. Like I don't think it's a bad thing if D'Lo loses more shots, because it probably means that he's just making smarter passes, which is like a good thing because he does take tough shots, which he makes. He's a tough shot maker too, but like if he's making better passes, I can't complain about that.
Yeah, and D'Lo seems like the most willing passer throughout the game of the three guards and wings, and like Beasley and Ant are more like straight gunners and like they have it in their mind to score first, pass later.
Yeah. And Beasley and Ant, like I said before, they're willing passers, but the reads they make are more simple than what D'Lo is making, you know? And I think they see the floor better than I thought they would, which is again, encouraging, but like they're still, you know, score first mentality type of guys and they'll make the right pass most of the time, which is kind of what you want from like those two are probably the guys that are just gonna get hot all of a sudden, even more than like, I mean, D'Lo's gotten hot before. We saw him drop 50 against the Wolves, you know, and that's something I think Cat brings out of him too, is just like, I don't know, just like a confidence and a swagger from him that we haven't seen so far. But I still think like the guys most likely to just like get hot, maybe not go over 50, but just like score 12 points in a row is like Beasley and Ant are just going to at one point just explode for like a really big run. And Cat will do that too, which isn't a bad thing. Isn't it it's a good thing to think like we have players on this team who might get hot, you know, more easily than Cat. Like that's like a good thing, you know? I don't know. I think this offense is going to, yeah, like I've been saying, I think it's going to be good. But the system has to be good. And at some point, the Timberwolves are going to probably have a different coach. I don't know if it's this season. I don't know. I'm not advocating for a firing right now just because I think it's unfair. People have heard my whole thing about that before, but at some point, Ryan Saunders isn't gonna be, if the Timberwolves want to win a championship, like there's gonna be another coach in this organization sometime, even if they're not close to winning a championship. If Cat's still here 2 years from now, which I'm hoping and praying he is, I bet Ryan's not the coach if they're in the playoff contention. And like, unless all of a sudden his system looks really good, I don't think he's a coach, because that's just not how the NBA works.
Yeah. But it's Ryan does deserve a chance with Evan Mobley and Cat and Beal healthy for a season. And
now, wouldn't that would be something if that, like, I'm not advocating for tanking whatsoever, just because like the odds are not in our favor. If this was the old lottery odds, I think I'd be much more in favor for it. You know, I'm okay with this being a lost season in general, if there's like developmental strides being taken, but the lottery odds are just so far against us that, and it's close to a 50-50 shot, but it's still 40-60. It's more likely that you lose it. But I'd be all in on just like tanking for it. And if you got the second pick and you want to take Mobley, like that's like the perfect player to put next to Cat as like a developmental guy. And then you have Jaden McDaniels off the bench. Like, cool. But like, that's not something I'm going to get my mind set on, because probably going to end up disappointed in the end.
Yeah. Knowing how everything goes in this franchise and Minnesota sports in general, the Wolves could finish with the last record and get the fourth pick.
No, yeah, exactly. And that's why I can't ever advocate for the tanking. But when you look at the NBA, the Pistons are going to tank this year. They're going to probably be the worst team in basketball. At some point, the Oklahoma City Thunder are going to actively try to lose games, because
I don't believe that.
I do. I don't think that there's any way that they can like justify winning, because there's no reason to do it. Shea knows how to win. He did it last year. They made the bubble. They made the playoffs, right? Yeah. So like, yeah.
They almost
Shea's,
even beat
Shea's not like Shea's not a, yeah, and Shea's not a player that's like ingrained with this losing mentality, and it's just gonna like get into him. So I think they can afford to just like, the season's a wash. Weird season, anyways. You got draft picks. Let's go. Let's get a high draft pick. Draft somebody. Dump all the picks in the world to get Bradley Beal or whoever the next disgruntled star is, and like, let's just shoot for it in a couple of years. So I think that they're going to tank at some point, but there's also other teams that are just going to actively try to lose games. The Kings, I feel like at some point this year, it's just going to start going south for them, and they're just going to try to actively like lose games, and the Timberwolves will end up being like the sixth worst record in the league. I just don't see the Wolves ending up with the bottom three record right now anyways, with a fully healthy team. So I don't know. And maybe some of these teams don't actively tank. Like, I'm thinking they will, but still, like, the Wolves are a pretty talented team where they're going to win some games the rest of the year and probably not be the worst team in the league. That's just kind of my two cents on it.
Yeah. And I agree. Like, if they're actively trying to win, they're going to win it more than enough to get out of that ideal 20 or 40% spot for the lotto. But, you know, they still have been doing some things that, like, make you question it, like pulling a star as he gets hot and then just kind of icing them and, like, not riding the hot hand.
Yeah. I have a theory that I haven't put out into the world at all, and I'm going to put it out right now, because it's something I've kind of still been building on. I don't think the Wolves are tanking, really. But I think when Towns went out, and they knew Towns was going to be out for a while, they kind of thought about it like this way. Like, right now, if we can kind of a stealth tank, and I haven't listened to Dane Moore's podcast yet, but he and Britt apparently talked about the stealth tanking, which is basically like trying to act like you're not tanking, but you are. I wonder if there's not a little bit of that. And the reason I say that is with Cat going out, you know, you're probably going to lose a lot of these games anyways. So why not like lose a few more? So when Cat comes back, maybe you won't be the worst team in the league, because you win some more games with Cat, and you can kind of blame all of the losses on like, Cat wasn't there. We're trying to figure things out. And Cat comes back, and all of a sudden it's like, you're winning you know, 4 out of every 10 games you play or whatever, you win 40% of the remaining games. So you're like, okay, you can see the vision with this team. You can see it kind of going, but you have like the 6th odds to get the pick. So where you still have like a 28% chance to get the, to get your pick back, but it's not like you were the worst team in the league. You helped your odds there, 'cause the odds were never in your favor anyways. So like, you took a few less odd like percentage points in the odds, but you're building something and you're seeing a little bit of success with these players. So that's kind of my working theory. But I don't think this team will tank with Cat in the lineup. That's been my theory. But I do wonder if there's a little bit of that happening over the course of Cat not playing.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. There's tons of evidence, like, you know, things that could be twisted in different ways to where, yeah, we're not tanking, obviously. But, you know, Josh Okogie still deserves to be in the lineup and shoot every open shot from three.
Yeah.
Or Juancho Hernangómez needed to play despite being awful.
Yeah.
Hopefully he bounces back. Or Ricky Rubio deserves to play, even though Jordan McLaughlin is the best player on the roster.
Yeah, the best player.
Yes.
It's definitely something that I've thought about, if like that's been happening. But of course, you never know. But yeah, I don't know. What you really think this? Like, do people really? Do you think it's a good move to tank? Like, right now, objectively, knowing the lottery odds and everything, do you think it would be a good move right now to just try and lose as many games as possible?
Well, we are – how many games into the season now? 24?
25.
And it's a 72-game season, right?
Yep, so we got, what, 47 games left?
More or less, yeah.
Yeah.
And we are how many games back in the out of even just the play-in seed?
Six and a half.
Okay, so 6.5 games out of the 10 seed.
Yep.
With 2/3 of the season left to go. I mean, I could be very, very easily talked into tanking, just because like Cade Cunningham, Jalen Suggs, Evan Mobley, they're franchise changers. Jonathan Kuminga, like they all will have went first this round or this past draft.
Yeah. And I do get some of the argument, but I'm a math type of guy and the odds just aren't in our favor. And like the Wolves already got that luck last year.
Mm-hmm.
Top three, we had a 40% chance and it stuck. What are the chances that happens again? Like if you're talking, if it's a 40% chance and you did it last year, your 40% chance this year for me, just like thinking and like this philosophical sense, is like worse this year than it was ever before. So that's kind of where I'm at. And I also see some of these teams like, man, yeah, the Spurs are 3 games above 500, but like, will they be? Will the Spurs be that good the rest of the year? Maybe. The Grizzlies, they're 500 right now. They haven't looked good recently. They lost like 4 straight games. Obviously, Jaren Jackson.
Well, that was with our back. Job.
Yeah, no. And yeah, that's fine. But like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't think I can advocate for right now. I think if we get to a point in the season where like, if we're still like 6.5 games back, 10 games from now, we've made up absolutely no ground. I would start to think, I think at some point it's fair to like bring that in the conversation of tanking. And just trying to get the best odds because like, and I don't even really care if the Wolves get into the play-in tournament. I literally just want to see some growth and some winning so that we're not stunting the development of like Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels and even a Cat and Russell pairing. Like I want to see those two like play well together. I want to see Ant develop and not get these losing habits. I want to see Jaden, you know, flourish. And I think those are some things that you just can't really like do with tanking. And that's why I'm so against it right now. But I do agree at some point, if the Wolves are still really bad, like, yeah, then it's smart to do it. Cause you try and capitalize on your 40% odds. Cause that's like your best hope. But right now I can't do it.
That's fair. And I will say that you can still like get those gains of Jaden McDaniels, Anthony Edwards, and what have you in a like losing capacity. Like you've seen Jaden McDaniels establish that he's an NBA player while the Wolves haven't been winning and whatnot. And you've seen Ant grow throughout the season, but this team is just not set up in a way, especially without Kat, to mesh well together and make sense.
Yeah, I agree with that. But you just look at like Andrew Wiggins was here for like what, 6 years, 5.5 years?
Too many.
And he just like didn't have that winning mentality in him. And probably part of it was that he was just on bad teams for so long that kind of was just ingrained in him. And I don't want that to happen with Edwards because I think he has all the talent in the world. And I don't know. That's a tough thing. But I don't want to talk about tanking too long. I want to look ahead to like the Timberwolves' next few games. Obviously, I want to talk about Friday's game, which a lot of people are probably listening to this on Friday morning or whatever. The Wolves play the Hornets. Now, the Hornets right now are 12-14. And they are 5-5 in the last 10. So the reason is LaMelo Ball, Anthony Edwards, number one versus number three pick. You know, everybody's saying the Wolves, you know, should have taken LaMelo Ball. And he was the guy I wanted to take. And I think he was the guy you wanted to take too. Not to say that I'm like super mad about it, because mine were pretty close, but like they're matching up. And, you know, that's going to be pretty exciting. What are you hoping to see in that game on Friday?
It all depends on if Graham is back or not. I think that it's a lot more winnable without him, but otherwise it's going to be a really good game. When Kat was still out, I was thinking to myself that like this would have been an ideal game for him to come back to because Cody Zeller isn't really, you know, good. He's Cody Zeller.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I thought too. Like, I was like, oh, if we can get Kat back for Friday against like Cody Zeller, like that's a good matchup to kind of insert yourself back into like the NBA. But he matched up against Serge Ibaka, which is a tougher matchup. But anyways, continue what you were saying.
Yeah, but I expect it to be more of the games we've seen lately versus like the usual Wolves. Like it's gonna be a very close game. It's gonna be fun. Both teams are more or less even in talent. It's just that
I think the Wolves,
Charlotte fits a lot better together.
I think the Wolves are far more talented, and not far, pretty. I think they're significantly more talented. But they just never really have played together, and like Charlotte's been able to pretty much play together all year. And I think they're deeper. I think Charlotte has more of those like solid role players that just like a PJ Washington, who still has room to grow, but like right now, you know, or like Miles Bridges, Devontae Graham, like those guys are good players. When you think about like the best players, like they have Hayward and then they have Ball and then like Graham, like the Wolves have Kat, and then who's obviously better than Gordon Hayward. Then they have D'Lo or Malik Beasley, who I think right now is still better than LaMelo Ball. And I think D'Angelo Russell is actually still better than LaMelo Ball. Because I really think that they are, in my opinion, just because LaMelo Ball is going to be better than both of those players, and maybe even by the end of the season. But right now, he's still only scoring like 14, 15 points a game. He rebounds the ball well. He passes the ball well. But like, I haven't seen him like just like take over a game to like pull him out to a win or any of that stuff, which we've seen D'Lo do, maybe not in Minnesota, but in other times. And we've seen Beasley like pretty much single-handedly bring the Wolves back into the game the other night with six threes in the fourth quarter. And I just think LaMelo's defense still is pretty bad. And D'Angelo Russell's defense is bad too. But like, I don't know, I'm not ready to crown Melo as better. So I think the Wolves are more talented. I think the Hornets are probably deeper. But even if LaMelo's better than Russell or Beasley, whoever is the Wolves' second best player, obviously I think Russell is better than Devontae Graham. But the problem is D'Angelo Russell is not playing on Friday's game. So it's Cat and Beasley. So that conversation really doesn't matter. And now I think the teams are a lot more even talent wise. But I also think like Cat's way above Gordon Hayward. So even if like, you know, Ball is better than D'Lo or Beasley, like Cat's just a lot better than Hayward. But I think where the Hornets make it up is that depth that they have of just like solid players. Like I said, Bridges and Washington, and then also just other guys. Like even like Cody Zeller is like a solid player, but he's got nothing on Cat and whatever. Like the matchup's not there for him, but like they have some talent on that team and they play well together. They just like synergize, which is a big thing, which the Wolves just haven't had time to synergize, and they just haven't. They're like the 27th best offense in the league right now. That's not good. Yeah. No. But specifically about like Ant, do you think it's going to be like a Wiseman thing where it's like he, you know, both of them kind of just play really well, drop 20 points, you know, whatever. Do you think one of Ant or Ball outplays each other? And if so, which one?
I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that Ant posters Ball and gets that same boost that he got from postering Wiseman.
I agree. And that's not because I don't like Ball. Like, people, like, get it. You can want both players to succeed. Like, that's what I don't get. Like, just because, like, LaMelo Ball is probably going to win Rookie of the Year, and probably deservingly so. He's played really well. But, like, why do I have to pick between them? Why can't I cheer for my guy and then also want Ball to succeed? But I do want Ant to just outplay Ball, specifically when they play against each other, just so people shut up. But, yeah, like, you don't want Ball to fail. Like, why would you wish that on an NBA player that's like literally younger than you? You're just like, oh, I hope he sucks. Like, I don't ever hope somebody like sucks. So that's just, yeah, I don't know. I really want him to poster him too, though. That would be fun.
If you made me bet, I would definitely take LaMelo Ball having the better game of the two.
I'm sticking with my guy, Edwards. I think he's just got like that chip on his shoulder to get to that point where it's like, oh, like everybody's saying this guy's better than me. Like, all right. And he's just going to like show it. And with D'Lo not playing, I think that like kind of helps a little bit too. So where he's going to have the ball in his hands a little more. It's going to be like the second game where Ant's actually playing well, because he's been playing pretty good lately. Last night's game, or the other night's game, wasn't great, but like for a while there, he's been shooting the ball a lot better, finishing at the rim better. He's going to have space with Cat there. They don't have a good rim protector like Serge Ibaka. They have Cody Zeller. And PJ Washington plays good defense, but I don't know. I think it's a game that Ant's just going to like drop 30 points. I think it's going to be his first 30-point game.
That'd be nice.
I
would still bet on Ball playing better.
Yeah,
even that's, with a 30-point game.
Yeah, I don't really care if Ant really. I would love to see him outplay Ball, but like, if he just plays as good as Ball or like a comparable game, like that's all I'm hoping for. Yeah. If he gets 8 points on like 20% shooting, like we'll never hear the end of that. That's like that's my fear. But I think Ant's gonna do a lot better than that. But yeah, I don't know. Do you think if the Wolves took Ball, they would still have traded for Rubio?
Probably not. However, I don't think we would see this version of Ball. It would be awkward and weird.
I think it'd be different. He
wouldn't have been as nearly successful.
The Hornets have really good players to put next to him. Like Miles Bridges is like a perfect like guy to have next to him. That's just like a high flyer, gonna catch the lobs. So I think that was really a good situation for him to go to. I don't know if we would have still traded for Rubio, but the reason I ask is because if we took Ball, we didn't trade for Rubio, we don't get those picks, and we probably don't have Jaden McDaniels.
The Wolves said they had him earlier.
Yeah, but maybe they take him at 17, or maybe they try and trade back. But you never know for sure, if you know how that works out. But maybe they do still make the trade for Rubio. Maybe Ryan's really going all in on 3-point guard lineups at some point or something. I don't know. I think it's going to be a fun game regardless. Who do you think matches up on LaMelo Ball? Who do you think guards him?
Oof.
It's got to be – it's such an interesting question because it depends who starts. Because, if Okogie starts at the 4 – so let's say it's the same starting lineup as last game. So it's Rubio, Beasley, Ant, Okogie, Cat. I could see it being Cat on Zeller, Ant on PJ Washington, Beasley on Bridges, Rubio on whoever starts at the 2. Does Devontae Graham start? Because Ball starts now.
You're forgetting about Gordon Hayward.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's probably Josh Okogie's matchup.
Yeah, so you probably put Ant on LaMelo or Beasley.
Going to say Rubio.
It's probably Rubio because, LaMelo's not the most explosive athlete. So, Rubio probably makes the most sense there. But there's going to be times that Ant or Beasley switched on to him or whatever. Yeah, I totally forgot about Gordon Hayward. Does Bridges start then, or does he come off the bench? I don't even know what their starting lineup looks like.
I have to look at it. I want to say it's if Graham is healthy, it's Graham, Melo, Hayward, Washington, Zeller, right?
Yeah, I don't know it's weird because LaMelo just started starting 6 or 7 games ago. He didn't start for much of the year. Bridges only started 1 game, so he's not a starter. So it must be, I don't know who starts at the 2 there. I would have to do more homework on that. But yeah.
Starts at the 2?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so yeah, interesting. I don't know. I am just really interested to see that game. I think it's a good matchup for Cat. I want to see how Ant handles not having a great rim protector with the spacing of Cat, because we haven't really seen that yet. Because the games that Ant's had, Cat's gravity so far have been against the Pistons, who have Plumlee, who's not anything spectacular.
And Grant.
Yeah, and Jeremy Grant, who's a good weak side. Yeah. But then it was against Rudy Gobert. Not an advantageous matchup because Rudy doesn't go that far out on Cat when he plays defense. He's still pretty far in the lane. And then it was against Serge Ibaka. This is the first time Cody Zeller's not a huge threat blocking shots and everything. And he's going to have Cat's gravity. So I'm excited to see what that looks like and how he can flourish off of that. Cause I think he'll have a good game. I think it'll turn out pretty good for him. But do you have any more thoughts on that? Cause then I just wanted to look into the Wolves, just upcoming schedule in general.
Not particularly. No. Saw the Cat wasn't even on the injury report, which was nice.
Yeah. For the first time since he got diagnosed with COVID, he's not even questionable, not even probable. He's legitimately just going to play.
Yeah. Good sign for his wrist too.
Yeah. And obviously his wrist too. I didn't touch on that earlier, but he was wearing basically, I don't know if it was actually a cast, but essentially it was a cast on his wrist the first time he came back. And it was just taped up in the other game, in the last game.
I never really saw him favoring it or anything. And looked like it's like on its way of healing pretty well. And
yeah, I think there was a couple times he bobbled a rebound and he bobbled a pass that led to a turnover. I don't know if that was because of the wrist, but that's like what immediately what my mind went to. But yeah, so he's got it taped up. It's been over 6 weeks since he originally injured, and he was told it was a 6 to 8 week injury. So yeah, so it's way healthier than it was originally, which is a good sign. And yeah, obviously great to see him not on the injury report at all. But following the Hornets game, which I think is kind of a must win, I think you want to say you're not tanking. You kind of just have to go out and win that game. Then it's the Raptors on Sunday, which is not a great. The Raptors are currently, I think, under 500. The NBA is weird.
A weird season.
They're one game under 500. They were really bad for a while, and now they're pretty solid. They're 12 and 13. But it's, like, not out of the realm of possibility that the Wolves could win that game. But not like a – you're not playing the Thunder, which the Wolves lost to too, but they didn't have Cap.
Yeah.
You got the Raptors, then you got the Lakers, then the Pacers, who are also playing well this season. They're 12 and 13, same as the Raptors. They start out really well, though, and they haven't looked great lately. But Cat's got to go against Miles Turner, who's just been, like, Ant's going to struggle in that game. Then it's the Raptors again. Then it's the Knicks, who've been playing pretty well. Then the Bucks, then the Bulls, Wizards, Suns, Hornets. So, like, there's some winnable games there, but it's like you match up against the Raptors a couple of times, the Pacers, the Bucks, the Lakers. Like, it's not like I would have loved if Cat was able to come back before this road trip and played like the Cavs twice, the Spurs, and the Thunder twice. Like, that would have been really advantageous for the Wolves to like get Cat back on like a much easier schedule. But the Wolves are going to have to earn some wins, and I think they need some wins there. You can't afford to just be terrible there. Otherwise, your season's pretty much gone. And then that's March 3rd is the Hornets game, and that's the end of the first half schedule. So we don't know what it looks like after that. We know the teams they will play. I don't have that list in front of me, but we don't know what that schedule will look like. But from what I understand, it's a pretty tough schedule still, too.
Yeah. Also, fun fact, March 3rd.
Every game's tough.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say every game is tough when you're the Wolves and you're the worst team in the league. Anyways, go on.
Oh, I was going to say, fun fact, March 3rd is the day that Juancho Hernan Gomez and Malik Beasley are eligible to be traded to.
Well, Malik Beasley's not going to trade unless it's for a star, because he's a star himself.
Yeah.
But Juancho could get traded. I wouldn't be surprised if the Wolves, because the trade deadline is like March 28th or something like that, I think. I wouldn't be surprised if like a Juancho or a Layman or Ed Davis or maybe even like a Rubio gets traded before the trade deadline this year. And I don't want to go into a full thing with trades, but like there's some candidates that they could get traded if the Wolves were trying to shed some salary or to maybe get like a fringe player that they really think they could use on this team or something. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a trade or even to free up like the $17 million from Rubio's contract somehow if they really just figured out it's not working. And maybe a contender wants him. Maybe like a Clippers wants him because they need a point guard or whoever it is. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Juancho there. Because like if by the trade deadline, McDaniels and Vanderbilt have been the fours on this team and Juancho like just – is out of the rotation. One, his trade value is just tanked. But two, like, I'd be really surprised if the Wolves are trying to keep him around, because you don't need him then if you feel good enough with McDaniels and Vanderbilt.
Yeah. And honestly, next year he's essentially expiring. So that's nice too.
And that's one thing. I don't think Juancho's contract is that bad. It's bad for like the production he's given us so far. But, like, that's backup money on, like, basically a two-year deal if he's not playing well. $7 million a year. Like, it's not that bad. Like, people are talking like it's, like, this immovable contract. Like, you see contracts like that get traded all the time. So I'm not too down on that contract. Like, I don't think it's the end of the world. Like, it sucks that we paid him if he's not going to play well. I think he'll play better than he did to start the season whenever he gets a shot just because he was really bad. but I don't think he's ever going to be like the guy to put next to Cap. But he was paid as a backup. Maybe at some point he is a backup.
If he catches that fire that he had post-trade deadline with us last year, would you put him in the rotation at all?
If he's going to average 14. Okay, so let's say like this, because it's not fair to put it that way. I got to go pull up the stats.
If he becomes a 40-plus percent three-point shooter.
I think it really depends on what everybody else is doing, first off. If like the bench is just fine, even with the limited spacing, probably not, just because like 40% shooting is fine. But when you literally don't do any, like pretty much anything else on the floor, that's not a great look. Like he doesn't play any defense whatsoever. So after the trade deadline, he's shot 42%. And he's a valuable guy to have, I think, in that role. If he's going to shoot 42% or 40% from three, if you want to plug him in, if somebody's hurt or if like somebody's in foul trouble or you need some scoring, fine. But I don't think just shooting 40% from three makes him a rotation player. But so after the Wolves got him, his per 36 minute, he scored 16 points a game per 36. So if he's on that again, he's obviously not going to play that. He scored 13 points a game actual time because he played like 29 minutes. If he's scoring at that rate in less minutes, say he's playing 12 minutes or whatever, and he's getting like 8 points in those 12 minutes or something, then he has an argument because he's being pretty effective. But the way Vanderbilt plays defense, the way McDaniels has been playing, I don't see him making the rotation unless he's does something on defense.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. And then the only way I even see it is if the offense on the second team just looks dreadful, and yeah. You need Jake Layman doesn't work out, and then Wancho just catches fire, maybe. Yeah. But
Layman's even looked good in like the minutes he's gotten recently, which haven't been a lot. They've been actually, he's gotten some minutes recently. He's looked a lot better. Not perfect, but a lot better than he looked for that stretch. So yeah, like, I don't know. It's interesting. Cause it's like the power forward is obviously like probably the worst position on the Timberwolves roster. You think about point guard, you got D'Lo. Rubio's been underperforming, but J-Max played well when he's in. Yeah. Shooting guard, you got Beasley and Edwards, or Beasley and
Noel.
Then you got at the small forward, you got Okogie, Edwards, Culver. That could be one. Maybe that's it.
Going to say small forward might be your answer there.
But like power forward, you got McDaniels and Vanderbilt, who are good. They play very admirably. But like that's kind of like the crowded part of the team right now. Mm-hmm. But it's also like the biggest question mark of the team, which just is like so weird. But it's like, how does it fit? Is it McDaniels is the guy and then it's Vanderbilt, or McDaniels and then Wancho then Vanderbilt, or McDaniels and then Vanderbilt and then Layman and Wancho? Or it's just weird what that looks like, and it probably changes from game to game, honestly. But someone like Layman can play the three, and someone like Vanderbilt can play the five. But we also saw Naz Reid share the floor with Cat too. So like Naz probably is going to get minutes at the four next to Cat if it works out, because Naz deserves more minutes than just playing behind Towns. If Towns plays 32 minutes a game, 34 minutes a game, Naz deserves more than 14 minutes. So where do you get those minutes? You get those minutes by putting him next to Cat, which even more limits the ability to like see what Wancho's got out there. So yeah, it's weird. So weird. I don't know. This team's weird. Dane Moore has been tweeting that like so much lately, just like weirdest team ever. And it's just, I don't know how better to put it.
It's hilarious. Honestly, my favorite thing is that like the 11 through 15th men of this team are all now like major like role players. To start out the season.
Yep.
Jaden McDaniels, Jared Vanderbilt, Jalen Noel,
Jordan
McLaughlin, who is, again, probably out of the rotation once everyone's healthy. And even Ed Davis, like Jordan McLaughlin and Ed Davis played awesome when they've been given chances. Yeah. Jaden McDaniels is hopefully going to be starting. Noel is your sixth man scoring option with Naz Reid. And then Jared Vanderbilt is your backup power forward who's been awesome, maybe even starting power forward.
Yeah, yeah, it's those are good developments, but it's also like bad developments too. Like Rubio hasn't played well. Culver hasn't played well. Kogi hasn't played well. So yeah, it's just weirdest team ever. That's like, I don't know how much better to put it. That's just like the perfect way to put it. I don't know if there's much else I want to talk about. I just want to see some wins, dude. Like two in a row. When's the last time the Wolves won two games in a row? Have they done it this ago. Just the first two games of the year?
Of the season. Yeah.
Being undefeated was cool.
I do have one last question.
Shoot.
Going back to the Charlotte game, if we did a redraft right now, would you still take Edwards?
No, I would take LaMelo Ball.
Okay.
He was a better prospect in my opinion. And I said that before the draft, you know, so it's not like I'm going back on, you know, now that I see Ball playing well, whatever. I just thought he was the right pick then. I still think he is. It doesn't mean I think like Edwards is a bad pick. Yeah. I just thought Ball would be the better one. And so far he's played better, but I do like the theory of Ant over Ball on this team in theory for what I think Ant can develop into.
Yeah.
But it's going to take a longer road for him to be there versus LaMelo to be like the guy that heightens everybody else around him. But what's your take on that? I want to know what you think. Would you, cause you wanted Ball one originally too, right?
Yeah. Okay. As a LaMelo Ball fan, I would say no, but as the Timberwolves fan, I would say yes.
Yeah. And you kind of touched on that earlier too, just cause like Ball probably wouldn't be playing as good for the Wolves as he is. Though, I will say this, a LaMelo Ball, Jared Vanderbilt, alley-oop sounds pretty dang good. That sounds pretty exciting.
Yeah, that'd be pretty fun.
But yeah, no, I think LaMelo's in a better situation. I think Ant would have been fine going to Charlotte too. I don't think that changes his situation much, except for the fact that, like, I don't know, there's some wings there, like Hayward and Bridges and stuff that, like, deserve minutes because they play defense and they score the ball well and stuff, but yeah. Yeah, I would still take LaMelo Ball one. That's kind of my
He was always in a tier amongst himself when I was looking at the draft.
I didn't view it that way, but I know a lot of people did. I viewed him those two in the same tier, and then it dropped off to where like Wiseman and those other players were. That's where I kind of viewed it. But so far he's played like he's been in a tier of his own. Which,
yeah.
So, but I always kind of viewed them 1A, 1B type of situation, but I never had Wiseman in the one C. I always had him just like a tier below, but I think he was still my third guy, if I remember correctly, with my final big board. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember.
But yeah, anyway, so I think Cat just opens up this offense. That's kind of what my big premise of this was and my piece I wrote recently, and we kind of just saw it. The beginning of that Clippers game. I do want to bring up this. The Wolves beat the Clippers or tied the Clippers in every frame of that game, except for the third where they lost. And the problem was they lost by like 13 points in that frame or whatever it was. So that's kind of the tough part. Like they literally played better or just as good as the Clippers all night, except for the third quarter.
Yeah.
Honestly, but that's also nice to see.
I would say that about every game, though, that we've had. Usually the team falls apart in one quarter and is either in the game or beating the team in every other quarter.
Theoretically, though, Cat helps that a lot, just for all the reason we talked about, you know? Because hopefully my whole thing is I don't think the offense gets stagnant with Cat in the game, but I have to edit that sentence. The offense doesn't get stagnant with Cat in the game as long as you give Cat the ball. Because in the third quarter, there were so many trips down the floor, he didn't touch the ball. And
well, yeah,
that
the offense
is
going through Josh Okogie. Better option, better scorer, shooter. Josh Okogie, not Cat.
exactly. And that's why I, that's why I had to change it. Like if Cat touches the ball, the offense 99 times out of 100 isn't going stagnant for 6 minutes, you know, Cat's going to do something. So that's why I'm pretty optimistic about it. I'm just excited to see Cat back. That's like, when I got the Shams thing, I was so excited. And obviously I was a little less excited once Cat's tweet came out. I thought he would end up not playing, which I was fine with, but glad to see him back. I'm beyond happy that he's healthy. And then hopefully D'Lo's back within a few games and we can just see what this team is, what this team has. Cause we've been waiting a year, like literally a year. Cat played against the Raptors, I think like today, 1 year ago. That was like their first game together, I think. I don't remember for sure. But like,
something like that, yeah.
And they've played five games together since. Like, that's just
gnarly.
We've been waiting a long time to see all three of those guys on the court, Beasley included, at the same time. And now we get to have Edwards with the two. After D'Lo comes back, hopefully both of his legs are feeling good. Culver's ankle sprain's probably getting pretty close to being healthy. He's been out for like 2 weeks, I think, now.
Yeah, I want to say that he was supposed to be back any day now, too.
Yeah, so other than that, you know, nobody else has shown up as questionable or doubtful or anything on the injury report. Yeah, so those guys can get healthy.
Beasley's suspension.
Yep, that's the only other thing, which we'll see what happens with that. But just excited to see this team back together. Any closing thoughts from you?
No, not that I can think of. Very excited, like you are. Very intrigued to see what the actual rotation is once everyone's healthy too.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I cannot wait for that at all. But all right, well, I think that's it. I don't have much else to talk about. We'll see if the Wolves can get a win Friday. That's a winnable game. I'm not saying they should win. That's a winnable game. Especially if Devontae Graham isn't playing, he's questionable. He's been out for the last, three games, and now he's questionable. So he might show up there. But either way, I think it's winnable regardless, just obviously a little bit harder with Graham back, but thanks Logan for coming on. I really do appreciate it. It's been a while. We definitely cannot wait 3 months again. It's almost been 3 months. We can't wait that long again. So we'll have you back much sooner than that. But yeah, thanks for coming on. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime.
Yeah, and everybody else, you can follow Logan on Twitter at LAltonNBA. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah, so go ahead, follow him there. That's LALTENNBA. One of the best Wolves follows, in my opinion. So he's got the mix of stats, funny things, Jordan McLaughlin support, everything you need as a Timberwolves fan. So make sure you follow him if you don't already. And also follow the Wolf Among Wolves blog on Twitter at AWAW blog. But thanks again. Thanks Logan for coming on. Thank you guys for listening. I really appreciate it. If you could subscribe, download podcasts, all that stuff helps me out a ton. But other than that, that was Logan Alton. I'm Brendan Hedke. Wolves play Friday night and hopefully we get a win. Peace.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.